Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 2, Maharaj Nimi meets the nine Yogendras. Text number 6. Pajantiye yata devam. Deva api tatvatam. Chaye vakarma sachivaha. Sadavo dina vatsalaha. Bhajanti. Worship. Yatha, in which way? Devan, the demigods. Devaha, the demigods. Api, also. Tata eva, just in that way. Tan, them. Chaya, in a shadow. Eva, as if. Karma, of material work and its reactions. Satjivaha, the attendants. Sadavaha, saintly persons. Dinavatsalaha, merciful to the fallen. Those who worship the demigods receive reciprocation from the demigods in a way just corresponding to the offering. The demigods are attendants of karma, like a person's shadow, but sadhus are actually merciful to the fallen. Purport. The words chayeva karma, satjivaha, are significant here. Chaya means shadow. The shadow of the body precisely follows the movements of the body. The shadow has no power to move in a way different from the movement of the body. Similarly, as stated here, bhajantiye yata devan, deva api tatayavatan. The results the demigods award to living beings correspond exactly to the living beings' actions. The demigods are empowered by the Lord to follow precisely the particular karma of a living entity in awarding him happiness and distress. Just as a shadow cannot move independently, the demigods cannot punish or reward a living being independently. Although the demigods are millions of times more powerful than the human beings on earth, they are ultimately tiny servants of God, whom the Lord allows to play as the controllers of the universe. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prithvi Maharaj, an empowered incarnation of the Lord, states that even the demigods are subject to punishment by the Lord if they deviate from his laws. On the other hand, devotees of the Lord, such as Narada Muni, by their potent preaching, can interfere in the karma of a living being by persuading him to give up his fruitive activity and mental speculation and surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In material existence, one works hard under the bondage of ignorance. But if one becomes enlightened by association with a pure devotee of the Lord, one can understand one's actual position as an eternal servant of God. By rendering such service, one dissolves his attachment to the material world and the reactions of his previous activities, and as a surrendered soul, he is endowed with unlimited spiritual freedom in the service of the Lord. In this regard, the Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, text 54, states, Yasvindra Gopa Matavindra Mahosvakarma Bandhanu Rupa Falabhajana Matanoti Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Chabakti Bhajam Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who burns to the root all the fruitive activities of those imbued with devotion. For those who walk the path of work, no less for Indra, king of the demigods, than for the tiny insect, Indra Gopa, he impartially ordains the due enjoyments of the fruits of activities in accordance with the chain of works previously performed. Even the demigods are bound to the laws of karma. Whereas a pure devotee of the Lord, having completely given up the desire for material enjoyment, successfully burns to ashes all traces of karma. This section of the Bhagavatam is very important. It emphasizes the nature, the character, the qualities of the devotees, the sadhus or saintly persons, and why it is so important to respect, honor, worship and serve the Vaishnavas, the devotees. And Vasudeva is making a very interesting point. Vasudeva is Krishna's father, right? So he has a relationship with Krishna. There's no denying his relationship with Krishna. He's his father, basically, right? Which is unique, extremely unique. Vasudeva is a pure devotee, but uniquely qualified in his relationship with Krishna. Yet, when Narada Muni comes, and as is explained, as it goes on, that Narada Muni, even though he's uniquely qualified as a devotee, why? Because he's Krishna's father, right? Still, he doesn't think he's a very good devotee. He says to Narada Muni, I had a desire to have a son. And so, because of that desire, I'm now still in the material world. So he says, he's a very exalted devotee, yet he's thinking himself, as exalted devotees do, I'm not a very good devotee. Right? This is the nature of advancement. The advanced devotee doesn't think he's very advanced. And as a result of his humility and his also out of his concern for the curse that's been placed on the Yadu dynasty, right, he's aware of it. It's mentioned in here, I'm not sure whether it's before or later on. He's aware of the fact that his family's been cursed. And so he's acutely conscious of the reactions that can come about as a result of disregarding the devotees. And in this verse, he's illustrating this point he's beginning his analysis. And he's illustrating this point that the demigods are very exalted because they recognize the Supreme Personality of Godhead and they're devotees. Om tad Vishnu paramam param sada pasyanti sarayahu dviva chakshuralatam tad vipaso bhavanyabho jagrivamsa sumindade Vishnu rajat paramam padam. This is a verse that I think the pujaris chant this verse every day. That's how I learned it, chanting it every day doing the puja. Which means, basically it means, you know, that the devotees are always looking to the paramam padam, the supreme abode of Lord Vishnu. So the demigods are all looking to Lord Vishnu. They're his servants in order to organize and orchestrate affairs of the material creation. That's their service. And as is mentioned here by Hridayananda Maharaj in the purport, they're just like any other devotee, insignificant servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But with a very powerful position. But even though they have such a powerful position, they are still obliged to award the results of a person's karma, just as a shadow is obliged to follow the movement of the body. So there's not much leeway in doing something like that. Basically, they're obliged. They're forced to act. And of course, if the demigods don't award people the results of their karmas, then what happens? They're also going to be punished by Krishna. Right? So they're bound, basically. Yet, the devotees are in a very exalted position. And why are they in a more exalted position than the demigods? Because they're not bound by their karmas. They are, and Narada Muni is such an empowered devotee, especially Narada Muni, very, you know, very powerful. And very merciful, Dina Vatsalaha is mentioned here. Friend of the most fallen even. You know, if a person's impious, then the demigods have to reward them, right? Chop. If a person's very pious, they give them benedictions according to their karma. But a devotee can be kind to the pious, so-called pious, and also to the impious, right? And can liberate them, just like we see in the example of Migrari, the hunter. He was not pious, right? He would half kill the animals to see them suffering. And get pleasure from it. He was such a hunter. Hunter. You know, hunter means to kill, right? Hunter. Anyway. He got pleasure. And yet, Narada Muni was able, by his potency, by his kripa or mercy, he was able to save the hunter Migrari and his family and his wife, and was able to elevate him to a very high position as a devotee. Yet he came from such a very, very low background, from a very impious situation. So a devotee is able to give their mercy, if you like, to anybody, and is able to elevate anyone and cut the chain of their sinful reactions or positive reactions, if they're, you know, their pious or impious deeds. So then this verse is quoted here: Yastvindra Gopa Matavendra Mahosva Karma. Whether you're Indra or whether you're Indra Gopa, you have to get the results of your pious activities. Yet, for those who are engaged in devotional service, the reactions are burnt up at the root. Ordinarily, one just gets the reactions, good or bad. But when one takes the devotional service, then the sinful reactions that we're due, the stockpile of sinful reactions that we've created for ourselves is destroyed at the root. So that means it's completely eradicated. So this is why Vasudev is glorifying Narada Muni and welcoming him and worshipping him, because he himself is thinking, I'm not a very qualified devotee, and you know, we've just been cursed, our family's just been cursed, which is further evidence of the fact that we're not very qualified devotees. Well, he's just been, he's humble, he's humility. And so he's now glorifying Narada Muni because he understands that you know, I'm a householder, I'm caught up in material existence, and my only hope really is to be enlightened by a devotee of the Lord and to get his mercy. Because without getting the mercy of a devotee, I can't make advancement. This is his mood. Even though actually, you know, he's the most involved, he actually has a direct relationship with Krishna. No? So, to continue the purport. In this regard, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has commented that unless one is engaged as a surrendered soul in the devotional service of the Lord, he cannot actually be considered nishkam, or free from all personal desire. Sometimes a materialistic person will engage in charity or altruistic activities and in this way consider himself a selfless worker. Similarly, those who engage in mental speculation with the ultimate goal of merging into the impersonal Brahman aspect of the Lord also advertise themselves as being selfless or desireless. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, however, such karmis and gyanis, while busy in their so-called selflessness, are in fact servants of lusty desires. In other words, they have not perfectly understood their position as eternal servants of God. The altruistic karmi falsely considers himself the best friend of humanity, although he is unable to give actual benefit to others because he is ignorant of the eternal life of bliss and knowledge beyond the temporary hallucination of material existence. Similarly, although the Gani proudly declares himself God and invites others to become God also, he neglects to explain how the so-called gods have come to be bound by the laws of material nature. Well, you're God, I'm God. Would you believe? Actually, the attempt to become God is based not on love of God, but on the desire to take the same status as God. In other words, the desire to be equal in all respects to the Supreme is simply another materialistic desire. Therefore, the Karmis and Ganis, because of their dissatisfaction in artificially trying to fulfill their own desires, can show no actual mercy to the fallen souls. In this regard, Sri Madhavacharya has quoted the Uddama Sanghita, Sukham ischanti bhutanam prayo dukha sahanrinam tatapi tevya pravara deva eva hare priyaha. Rishis want happiness for all beings and are almost always incapable of tolerating the unhappiness of men. Symptom of the sadhu. Nevertheless, the demigods are superior because they are very dear to Lord Hari. But although Srila Madhavacharya has placed the demigods in a higher position than the merciful rishis, Srila Jiva Goswami has stated, Sadavas tu nakarma anugataha. The sadhus are actually better than the demigods because the sadhus are merciful regardless of the pious or impious acts of the conditioned souls. So the demigods are focused on serving Krishna, which is very elevated. But the rishis, who want to cut their connection to the material world, are considered greater. This apparent disagreement between Madhvacharya and Jiva Goswami is resolved by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who points out that in the statement by Srila Madhvacharya, the word rishi or sage indicates the so-called sadhus or saintly persons among the karmis and gyanis. Ordinary fruitive workers and speculative philosophers certainly consider themselves to be at the summit of pious morality and altruism. However, since they are ignorant of the supreme position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they cannot be considered equal to the demigods, who are all devotees of the Lord and aware that all living beings are eternal servants of the Lord. Even such demigods, however, cannot be compared to the pure devotees such as Narada. Such pure devotees are empowered to award the highest perfection of life to both pious and impious living beings who have only to follow the orders of such pure devotees. So this is the main point, that the devotees are in such an exalted position because their main purpose is to see that others don't suffer. Right? They don't want others to suffer. And that's why they don't encourage them to perform fruitive activities, which simply give them some material benefits, but the material benefits don't have any lasting merits. You know, they're limited and temporary. So the devotees say, why endeavour for fruits that are limited and temporary? Better to uncover your original spiritual identity, which is your eternal position. And in that eternal position of Satchit Ananda quality, spiritual nature, then one will be fully satisfied, fully happy. You know, we work very hard for material benefits, but what happens? They're taken away from us. So what's the benefit? There's no real lasting benefit from those things. So the devotees encourage, come to the position of happiness, permanent happiness. Don't come to the position of temporary happiness. It's one thing. The other thing is that, you know, The Jnanis aspire to understand their spiritual nature, but on a limited platform of understanding, which is, you know, that we're all spiritual by nature, basically. We're all part of the Brahman. There's not a full realization. And as is pointed out here by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, generally speaking, those persons who aspire to become one with the Brahman are doing so basically from a selfish platform. Right? Which again, as Prabhupada points out, it's mentioned also in the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, you may think that you're liberated because you understand that you're qualitatively one with God. But it is just
impurity.
It's a what?
Impurity.
Impurity. Impurity. Yeah, it is an impurity. You're right. It's a very limited realization, shall we say. And so in that sense it's not fully purified. So we could say impure understanding. Yeah, impure. Yeah, why not? I was going to be a little bit softer in my explanation. Because, you know, it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned that actually that understanding is better than nothing. So some allowance is given for those who aspire to the spiritual. Do you know what I mean? When they come in the association of the devotees, then that impersonal understanding may not be beneficial. In fact, sometimes it can be an obstacle in making progress. But at least to come to the Brahman realization or some understanding that we're higher than the material is better than no spiritual understanding. But you're right, impure, and especially because, you know, if there's that desire to become one with God so that one can be equal with God. So there's a spiritual understanding, but there's not a full spiritual understanding in the realization that we're not God the controller, but rather we may be God the servant. Right? That's our actual position. We're the servant. So the devotees don't encourage people in those ways to be a fruitive worker or to be a jnani, to come to the realization of your spiritual understanding on an equal platform with God. The devotees teach people, no, actually, you know, material pursuits are futile and very frustrating, and to become one with God is to become his servant, basically. That's what becoming one with Krishna means, to become his servant. In that way, then, we work in cooperation. That's what becoming one means, not that we merge, but rather we become one in purpose. One in heart. One in service. So that's the and that's the exalted position of Narada Muni. And Vasudeva recognizes that. He recognizes that. You know, one has to serve the devotees in order to please Krishna. That's the methodology. Krishna says, acharyam mam vijaniyam. You know, the spiritual master, the acharya, is to be worshipped as myself. Okay? Krishna's more pleased when his devotees are worshipped than when he himself is worshipped. And Vasudeva understands that, even though it's amazing, you know, Vasudeva is Krishna's father. He has a direct relationship with Krishna. Yet what is he saying? I'm not I'm already connected to Krishna. He's I'm very fallen. And so let me now worship Narada Muni, the great sage, because by worshipping the great sage, I'll make some spiritual advancement. He doesn't need to make spiritual advance, but he's already more advanced than anybody else, practically speaking. So therefore he's really showing us by example that actually direct service to Krishna, if we think we can approach Krishna directly without taking consideration of his servants, then actually that kind of service is not accepted by Krishna. It's mentioned in a few purports down the track. Very important lesson in this whole pastime, set of pastimes, this pastime, and the discussions between the Navayogendras and Maharaj Nimi. You know, that one has to approach the devotees in order to please Krishna. And it's the devotees who can cut our bondage to material existence. Nobody else. Krishna is capable of doing it, and sometimes Krishna does it directly, but actually that's very rare. In the Nectar of Devotion proper, it's mentioned by Rupa Goswami. Very rare to directly receive Krishna's mercy. Very rare. And become purified in that way. And it's also very rare to get the mercy of the devotees and be purified in that way. That's also very rare, actually. But it's why it's said that actually the devotees are more merciful than Krishna. Because the devotees go out as Krishna's representatives to try to save everyone. And we can see the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and of the Sankirtan Jagya, if you like, the Sankirtan movement, because the Lord has appeared in this role as a devotee to go out and basically perform Krishna's work, which is to cut everybody's reactions to their past karmas. And it's actually only the devotees who can do that. The demigods can't do that. The demigods can only award the results of a person's pious or impious activities. They're bound to do that, duty bound to do it. They can't change things. That's their service. But the devotees are in a position where by their example and by their preaching and by their soft heartedness, you know, their soft hearted nature, they're actually able to change people's lives so that they're freed from the reactions of all the sins that they've performed in so many lifetimes. You know, even just a little insignificant devotee like us can actually change people's lives. That's why, so, you know, by worshipping the devotees, by being very respectful to the devotees, so important, so pleasing to Krishna, because the devotees are actually empowered by Krishna to cut the knots of fruitive activities, to cut the reactions to past karmas, and to free people from material existence. Get them out of the material world. Most beneficial welfare work, basically. Para upakar. The topmost welfare activity is to engage people in devotional service so that, what is it? Karmarni nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. Bandhana rupa phala bhajana matanoti. By being engaged in devotional service, then all of the reactions of one's past are burnt up to the root. And so that's why Vasudeva is being so respectful to Narada Muni, and he mentions it later on. You know, immediately and very easily, one who serves a devotee is elevated to a very high position immediately and easily. You can be the lowest of the low or the highest of the high. If you serve a devotee, then immediately all of that can be nullified. The material reactions are nullified and one is elevated very rapidly to the spiritual platform just by following the instructions of a devotee. This was the quality that Srila Prabhupada appreciated so much in his disciples. The fact that they would just do anything that he asked them to do. Right, there's a story of, you know, the devotees in La Trobe University. They did a program at the university and it was a wet day and there were puddles and mud. And, you know, Prabhupada came and the young brahmacharis, they just paid their obeisances in the mud and the puddles. And Prabhupada says, you know, very simple, very simple. But he appreciated that, even though that was probably a stupid thing to do. Prabhupada appreciated that quality in the devotees, that unquestioning faith and adherence, you know, faith basically, very strong faith in the order of their spiritual master. And, you know, as a result of that, even if we make mistakes or whatever, if there's adherence to that order, that's also then very pleasing to Krishna. And one, you know, the fruit, the karmas burnt up by that engagement in devotional service. So Vasudeva recognizing that in Narada Muni, if I just serve Narada Muni, the great saint, then I can be elevated to the topmost spiritual position or immediately. Because he's already on the topmost spiritual position, but you just see how he has that attitude of wanting to serve the Vaishnavas. He's not thinking, oh, I'm already Krishna's, you know, dad. I'm Krishna's father. Who can teach me about devotional service? He's thinking, I'm still in the material world because I desired to have a son. As mentioned later on, that actually he's thinking like that because he's actually bewildered by the lila shakti, the internal energy. So he's thinking like that. Because actually he's obviously a very exalted devotee. So we can learn from Vasudeva in this section here, we can learn from Vasudeva how to appreciate the devotees and what an exalted position a devotee is in, even a very inexperienced devotee as such is worshipable. If they have that very strong faith in the order of Krishna and following Krishna's order following the orders of the spiritual master there's the Vatma Pradashika Guru, you know, the devotees who show us the way, there's the Siksha Gurus who teach us, and then the Diksha Guru who initiates us. They're all basically Krishna's representatives, right? They're all Krishna's representatives and they teach us basically Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada points out the Chaitanya Charitamrita. They teach us the Bhagavad Gita, basically. That's what we're taught in the beginning of devotional service. That's what solidifies us in a way so that we can make spiritual advancement. We learn the very basic aspects of devotional service, which is pretty much contained in the Bhagavad Gita. That's why the Bhagavad Gita is such an important foundational text for us, because it teaches us the basics of devotional service. And of course, as Prabhupada mentions, one of the most important verses, Tadviti Pranipatena Pariprashnena Sevaya Upadekshankite Yanam Gyaninas Tattvadasmaha. Those who have seen the truth, that is, that we should become the servant of the servant of the servant. It was Lord Chaitanya's prayer, right? Gopi Bhattu Pada Kamalaya Dasa Dasa No Das. I am not a Brahmana. I am not a Kshatriya, not a Vaishya, not a Sudra, not a Sannyasi, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Brahmachari, I'm a servant of a servant of a servant of a servant of the master of the gopis. Gopi Bhartu means the master of the gopis, Krishna. Does anybody have any comments or questions at any of these points? Yes, Srikant.
As you said, regarding the demigods.
Yeah.
Now, they are the empire living entities.
Yes.
What are the day-to-day activities?
What are they doing?
Like,
yeah, what are they doing?
They live for a long time, so...
What are they doing? Well, they're enjoying their service to Krishna. Well, as far as I can understand, they have the universal affairs to manage. There's a bit of responsibility in being a demigod, and they have their servants, and I guess they've got to basically keep an eye on things. Probably have routine checks to make sure that everybody's doing their service properly. Progress reports, give feedback. Assess things, punish people if they're not doing their job properly, reward others if they're doing, this is what they're doing, they're rewarding, punishing if they're not doing properly, rewarding if they're doing their job properly.
Huh? So they're born with karma, so they are also able to sense gratification by the karma involved.
Yes, to a degree, yes. They're highly elevated personalities, but we see from the pastimes of the Bhagavatam, it teaches us that, the most elevated personality, the most selfless personality is a pure devotee. And we see sometimes in the character of some of the demigods, while they're very exalted devotees, at the same time they're also not devoid of their personal motivations. Huh? Indra... Lord Brahma, even, who's the topmost of the demigods. There's that story. We just read that story about Bhrigu Muni. He went to test Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu. Right? And he refused to embrace his brother Lord Shiva, and he got angry. Well, when he kicked Lord Vishnu said, "Oh, Bhrigu Muni, I'm sorry, I must have hurt your foot. Right? Let me massage your foot, your lotus foot. Kicking my hard chest." Wasn't Lord Shiva going to kill him? He got so angry he was actually close to killing his brother. His younger brother, because he was being offensive. Lord Brahma just got angry but was able to check himself with his intelligence, being highly intelligent, it mentions. So, it appears from the different histories, from the Puranas, that the demigods, being very elevated personalities, have a very special relationship with Lord Vishnu, but they're not entirely free from material motivations. Mahatmaji.
From just now coming to me, it appears that Lord Shiva is not a Vikarati. He doesn't know the past, present, and future. Can we say that? Lord Shiva?
I'm not sure whether we can say that, because sometimes these pastimes are such that their ability to tell the past, present, and future is curtailed. And ordinarily they would be, right? Ordinarily he might be, but if, you know, for a particular leela or pastime, sometimes the ordinary, you know, capabilities of these devotees is restricted. Do you know what I mean?
Like Vrindavan, he gives the benediction.
Rikasura. Yes, yeah. Yes, well, that's right. But I'm just wondering whether it is described somewhere that Lord Shiva is able to tell past, present and future. He's pretty powerful personality. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes, ordinarily, yes. But sometimes, because these pastimes are related to Krishna and there's a lesson to be taught, then sometimes you'll see that, you know, those capabilities that they would ordinarily have, they're restricted because of the lila. And so the lila shakti covers them over. And that's to illustrate Krishna's supremacy. Huh? People don't like that, of course. Why Krishna gets special treatment? It's only the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Because Narasimhi, they say, is a reality. Narasimhi knows the past, present, and future.
Yeah.
But he was also able to mention it.
I'm not sure of any occasion, other than before he became Narada Muni. Any other comments or questions? Yes.
You see, like, it's a hard thing that when we pick up by doing the really big problems in spiritual life and so on, there are some offenses involved towards other devotees. And usually, in general, offensive attitude. How does this offensive attitude develop? Because, like, usually it can be left, like, you know, start being kind of offensive, but it can
the cause. The original cause of everything is our desire to be independent from Krishna, to be the enjoyer, to make ourselves numero uno. Do you know what that means? Number one. We want to be number one. And throughout our devotional lives, the various difficulties that we face are usually prompted, or the impetus is that, you know, we want to exercise that independence and want to enjoy separately from Krishna. Right? So what happens is, and sometimes it happens, it just happens because of our conditioning. It's not something that we want because, you know, basically we come to Krishna consciousness with the overarching desire to render service to Krishna through Prabhupada and through the devotees. But this contamination or this desire, ultimately it's a desire to want to enjoy, which is inherent even within Krishna. It comes from Krishna, the desire to be to enjoy. And because we're a part and parcel of Krishna, then we also have that desire. But when it is manifest through that false idea, that false notion of being independent from Krishna, then it will display itself in a variety of ways. And one of them is, you know, being rebellious to the order of the spiritual master, or being rebellious in the association of devotees. Now, that's not unusual, and we tolerate it. You know, Prabhupada says, you know, we're all in a mental hospital, and, you know, sometimes we have a bit of a relapse, right? So we tolerate that as devotees because we look at the overarching desire of the devotee. He wants to be a devotee, but he's having a little bit of difficulty, right? But ultimately it comes from that point of desire. And that's why it's recommended, you know, that we in order to sublimate that desire, we turn it into service to the spiritual master. And in our case, within ISKCON, you know, service to the spiritual master, assuming that Prabhupada is our acharya, that means service to ISKCON. Prabhupada said, you know, I am ISKCON. ISKCON is my body, basically. Non-different from me. So, and Prabhupada also said ISKCON is non-different from Krishna as well, because we're following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, if we're following it properly, right? So we sublimate our, you know, enjoying and controlling and whatever propensities we have to service to Krishna and service to the devotees. Especially in ISKCON, it means service to the devotees, which in one sense is a real challenge. And so we have to curb our conditioning, which is, you know, to want to be the enjoyer, to one of being enjoyed or being just a servant and learning to relish the mellows of service. But sometimes because of our conditioning, there's a clash. And you know what happens is usually the humble devotee, he realizes, oh God, you know, this is just the same old problem that I've got. I want to be the controller and Krishna wants me to be the servant. And it comes out sometimes just in rebelliousness. What to do? What to do?
Therefore, we have to be very humble. Last time we were discussing.
We have to be very humble. Humble. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's not easy. Mm. And even when you're humble, you can get proud. I'm the most humble. Step aside, you guys. It happens. Well, I'm not humble at all. I just want what I want. Get out of my way. So,
that means I'm not humble.
Huh?
That means I'm not humble.
Obviously. Obviously. So, yeah, we have to. One has to be tolerant. Trinada-bhita-nichana-tarora-vasahishtana. So, tolerant. You know, there's a story of the thief who went on a pilgrimage. I've told it. Prabhupada tells that story and on the way to Krishna. And, you know, he was overcome by the desire to want to steal. So he started to steal everybody's possessions, but then he realized, oh boy, I'm going on a pilgrimage and I'm behaving. This is so, such bad activity of mine. He put everything back, but it was all in a, couldn't remember where he got things from, and he created a big disturbance. Then the next day he admitted to everybody, well, actually I'm a thief by nature and I couldn't overcome the urge to steal until I realized what I was doing, but then I couldn't put everything back. Please forgive me. So, you know, when a devotee makes a mistake but is repentant or, you know, is sorry for what they've done, then the devotees will accept them. Yeah, it's okay. We all have our moments. And in one sense, that's the process of purification. Because, you know, what happens is we're put in a position where we have to face the reality, and we have to face ourselves, and we see, oh, I'm not who I thought I was. I thought I was a Paramahamsa. And you know, that's the nature of a neophyte. Kanishtha Adhikari thinks I'm actually more advanced. But interesting to see here, Vasudev, he's obviously very advanced, but how does he feel? He feels, I'm actually just a fallen householder who's trapped in material existence. So when Krishna reveals our weaknesses and faults to us, he's actually doing us a favour, because that generally then creates that humble mood. So the difficulties are designed in such a way to benefit us so that we'll become more humble. Krishna doesn't like pride in his devotees, and he'll remove it. Anything else? This is a nice section of the Bhagavatam, this one. Kutra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.